At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a brand new podcast. Episode 134, I want to say, of your favorite...
I have no idea. Sorry.
Of your favorite Formula One show. And yes, by the sound of that, we bring good news. Jamie183 survived his flight to and from Switzerland. Did you have a good time, my friend?
I did, yeah. The flight especially, actually. Shout out to Ethiopian. Their quality. We got free food and drink on a 90-minute flight to Geneva. It was, yeah, probably the best flight I've ever been on, to be honest, for £50. And, well, we're going to get about £200 back. So, yeah, all's well.
And if ever you wanted to know where your tax money was going, it's Jamie183 taking cancelled flights via Ethiopia. But anyway, we're back, Jamie, for I think what can only be described as the resurgence of Formula One. It's back! We can enjoy F1 again. It was a fantastic weekend. Was it the race of the season? We've got plenty to go through today, but we're going to kickstart it, aren't we?
Straight off the bat, it definitely was.
Yeah, exactly. And if obviously if you didn't watch the Grand Prix and you for whatever reason only use Knowing Wheel as your way of keeping up with Formula One, we can say off the bat it's definitely a weekend to go back and rewatch there. Of course, quickly though, before we jump into anything, just a quick PSA. Of course, for those of you that enjoy watching Knowing Wheel, you know, like seeing our faces as well for some reason, make sure from 2024 you sub to the official Knowing Wheel YouTube channel. Of course, all the podcasts are going to be going live over there exclusively rather than on my own channel. Jamie, can we get our weekly check-in on your sub count? See if we've caught you up yet?
I don't think I've lost anything yet.
Oh, come on, people. If you're sub to Jamie183, make sure you unsub.
Why? I actually got up. I'm on 541 now.
Oh, we've messed up royally. 541. Yeah. We're up to 207. So we're, what, 334 behind. So that gap is still coming down every week.
It is. So if for whatever reason you're subscribed to my channel, which hasn't been uploaded on in 18 months, or maybe 2 years now, I don't actually know, then please unsubscribe and subscribe to Knowing Wheel instead. I reckon by the end of 2023 we can do it.
I reckon we should be there by the end of 2023. And of course, if you needed extra incentive to get yourself subscribed to the Knowing Wheel channel, we've also for some reason agreed that if we reach 10,000 subscribers over there, we're going to try and do a tour of every F1 factory inside 24 hours.
Where will Andretti be based?
Just out of interest. Well, we better hope we do it before Andretti because we're going to struggle to get a flight.
Yeah, although they might have a European factory.
Probably. I would assume so. They'll have a European base. But that is a topic for another day, Jamie, because, you know, that is America, but we're going to start talking about China.
Are we?
You know,
oh, yeah, we are.
Big superpowers in the world. But this is more about a lovely young man.
I quote Matt212, but a week ago,
maybe two
weeks ago,
yep,
saying that Zhou Guanyu is not going to retain his seat and it will in fact go anywhere else because Zhou doesn't have money. But what we do know is
he didn't have money.
Well, he doesn't, which is true. But he is a good driver. And Alfa Romeo are so cautious in everything they do that they're retaining the same driver lineup. So we move. And I never had any doubt that Zhou would be on the grid in 2024.
You were adamant he was just going to Williams.
I wasn't adamant. I was like,
you were
if Alfa drop him. If
you
Alfa
were
drop
dead
him,
set on
Williams.
Him just picking up that Williams gig because you were so assured that he was going to lose his Alfa Romeo drive.
No. I've always had faith in Zhou. So... And I think he does deserve it. I think neither driver has been able to shine this season that much because the car is horrific. But yeah, I think Joe has stepped up his game compared to his rookie season. They're pretty even, all things considered, really. I think Bottas slightly edges it, but the points are so close and the quality especially is quite close as well on difference time, like time, what's it called? Delta. So yeah, I think it's a fair renewal. I feel a bit of a Teo Porcher, but taking a year out after winning F2 is quite a well-trodden path now.
Are you accepting he's going to win F2?
Well, Vesti has the curse of me supporting him, so there's no doubt in my mind.
It's incredible, isn't it, how often you get the kiss of death to Formula 2 drivers' careers.
Why would his wheels fall off at the same time?
Because Prema didn't put them on properly.
Well, Prema are the most well-run team in junior Formula, and they forget to put the wheels on just because I've said I want Vesti to win the title.
Pretty much. That's how your kiss of death works. I mean, it's weird, though, going back to Zhou Guanyu quickly, because, of course, you know, we can talk about Teo Porcher, and, of course, you know, if he does win F2 this year, you know, he's going to obviously have to take a season out, and then obviously what happens there. The strange thing is with Zhou Guanyu, and of course you banged on about this a lot last year, of course, was that he kind of got a lot better when the car was worse, didn't he? This year, he's probably been at his worst when the car's been at its best, which is most notably, it's got to be Hungary, hasn't it?
Well,
you know, qualifying P5.
That wasn't really his fault.
Well, it was.
The car had a clutch issue where the clutch went back in when he was holding the revs. So he was flustered. I agree, the turn one collision was his fault, but he was massively flustered because the car messed up on him on the grid.
Right.
So okay. I don't blame him for that, really. And he did a phenomenal job to get it to P5 anyway. So
yeah, the car was good that weekend. But I appreciate what you're saying as well. But, you know, I think it's in contrast, isn't it, to last year? You know, where some of Joe's best weekends were where the car was at its worst.
Well, and his best weekends were where the car broke down, which didn't
often as well, yeah. But, I mean, I like the guy, obviously. You know, Jamie being a big fan of him, of course. Luckily, I've met him and spoke to him. Got to get that in there.
Drop that one in. Well, I've met Lando Norris, so, you know.
Great, okay. you know, it's... You know, I like Zhou Guanyu. I think he's a good guy, but I just don't think he's got that potential X factor, which I think Teo Porcher might
I agree with you on that, but I like Joe, so I want him to stay.
Yeah, that's fair enough. You know, it's certainly not... The only thing I disliked about that news was knowing how happy you'd be about it. you know, more than anything else.
Well,
you know, I like Zhou Guanyu, so...
And he gets through his home race.
Yeah, let's be fair. That's optimistic still. China will still have COVID problems in 2040, the way things are done down there.
Just keep giving Joe a year extension until he actually gets to race Shanghai.
perhaps that's the whole Chinese plan with it.
Yeah, potentially. Well,
But surely, Jamie, the big news this weekend has got to be the technical directive.
I hadn't even seen this, so you can talk about it.
So basically, the FIA decided coming into Singapore, they were going to clarify two things on the cars. Well, three things, kind of. Flexible body parts, which were basically aimed at wings and floors. So, of course, you know, we had a lot of this in 2021, didn't we, where both the Red Bull and the Mercedes were done for squatting. Of course, basically trying to make the cars, you know, faster down the straight, of course, because they effectively had less aerodynamic drag on them, because obviously the rear of the car was squatting, and obviously the air gets pushed off the front and away from the car. It was believed, of course, with the 2022 regulations that was impossible. But, of course, you tell Adrian Newey something's impossible and he'll just find a way around it, because it's what Adrian Newey does. But the other big one was the clampdown on stabilisation devices. So, of course, everything this year has been spoken about. You know, what's made the Red Bull so phenomenally fast in race pace, you know, over everything else, is the way the anti-dive and the anti-squat on the brakes, of course. Similar to, obviously, the flexi wings, but also, obviously, under-braking, you know, they can run the car so much lower to the ground because when they brake, the car doesn't tip at the front as much as any other. So it's made it a lot more of a stable platform, which, of course, you know, is fantastic over one lap because you know what the car's going to do, but even more fantastic over a race distance because you know the car's going to do a similar thing more often, which, of course, you know, for a Formula One driver, when you're trying to push the limits, that is critical. This weekend, obviously, these new technical directives came in, and obviously, we'll give you a bit of a spoiler. Red Bull were nowhere, and I don't know if you saw any interviews with Jamie, with Christian Horner, but he seemed a little too eager on too many occasions to try and make it clear that the car hasn't changed.
I mean, yeah, potentially. It's kind of like when they, in 2019, with the engine technical directive, where Ferrari technically hadn't changed anything, but suddenly were well slower. So, well, I think I like to believe Red Bull haven't changed anything, but we'll kind of see when we get to Japan, I guess. But then when did the directive come out? Because if it was on like Thursday, or like if it was not that long before the race, and they wouldn't have really had that much time to put the stiffening mechanisms or whatever in, like to make it pass the test if it was going to fail the test before. So I struggle to believe they did change anything massive. I just think potentially the Singapore layout just didn't suit the car at all. But I guess we'll see next week in Japan. If they're slow again, then maybe they've been bending the rules all year. But Red Bull have got history. So.
Exactly. And I think the thing is, of course, what you've said there is, you know, it might not be that they had to, you know, swap out parts to obviously meet these new standards. What it might just have been is they can't run the car as close to the limit as they wanted to. You know, I mean, it might well be that car has not changed that much as a car, but it might mean that the setup is far more compromised to actually meet these new requirements.
Yeah, because that was their big problem. It seemed just it was so unpredictable in corners because they were struggling with the rear end a lot in practice, and they tried to change something, and suddenly the fronts were just not doing what they wanted either. So, it, like, even on the onboards, it just looked like it was an absolute handful. So...
I mean, let's be fair. I mean, we'll talk about obviously this more and more obviously as we go through, and of course, especially, you know, as we head towards Japan. It's not going to make a difference in the bigger picture this year. Red Bull have won it. Like, we all know that anyway. Like, it's wrapped up. But it is going to be bizarre. And, you know, don't get me wrong, this is coming from a world of hopium. I don't know. You know, I'm with you that Singapore probably just didn't suit their car as well. But even if we've got a good scrap between now and the end of the season, like Red Bull is fighting the other cars, you know, that will be great. But it would be weird, isn't it, if suddenly kind of the only other example I can think of off the top of my head is Braun, where suddenly they're no longer the fastest car anymore and they just kind of squeeze out a world championship.
But even, but that, even that's even not going to happen. 09 was a lot more gradual, wasn't it? Like, obviously they won 6 out of 7, but then all the time through those 7 races, the pack was getting closer and closer every time. Whereas Red Bull were just, especially the last few races after the summer break, they were just dominating. Yeah, 15 wins in a row. And suddenly it's just done.
It would be mad.
That would be very strange. But I think they'll be back to winning ways next week in Japan.
Probably. But at least we know, you know, that, spoiler alert, of course, the Red Bull aren't going to have an undefeated season, which is massive for Formula One. We obviously haven't had viewing figures come out yet, but I would be intrigued to know how much views went up for the Grand Prix just because Red Bull looked dog poo.
Yeah, probably. And like compared to 21 or 22, the viewing figures would have been slashed this year generally.
Oh, absolutely. Horrendous. So. I mean, you've seen that even just as a content creator on YouTube. You know, the views are nowhere near what they have been the last couple of years. You know, it's a fantastic time to have gone full time. but, I mean, without spoiling it, it did go to show, you know, as we've said all season long, how great this year would have been without Red Bull. This weekend went and proved it, didn't it? When Red Bull aren't at the front, you get absolute mega races. And, you know, obviously, pre-practice, obviously, we've kind of led into it, haven't we, quite nicely there. Obviously, you mentioned the Red Bull was just all over the show. But the big talking point as well, of course, you know, alongside that was, once again, Carlos Sainz has come to the second half of the year and looked fast.
Yeah, he's really smashing it since the summer break. Obviously, pole position in Monza. We got the podium in Monza to go with it. Was unlucky not to... he put up a massive fight, didn't he? And he was quite unfortunate.
He basically defended all day at Monza. He was mad.
And then was the faster Ferrari driver in Zandvoort as well. So he's really, come back from the summer break. Just different gravy. And he's suddenly like, here he is. And once again, he was on it in practice. And that was a sign of things to come, really.
Yeah, it was absolutely mad, wasn't it, of course? So we move into qualifying then, I suppose, probably the best way of doing things. You know, Red Bull having an absolute disaster. And it just seemed to get even worse, didn't it? Because I have no idea, genuinely, and this isn't just because I don't like Max, but how on earth did he get away with both of those blocking incidents?
I have no clue.
And that says it all, that you're a Red Bull fan, and you don't get that.
I just think I mean, I know Tsunoda didn't turn up to the stewards, which is so stupid.
How they can get away with that as well.
But I think Max was very fortunate. I think the pit lane one was less cut and dry. just because, like, they kind of smoothed over it on the radio quite well. They were like, Max, we got a problem, and he just drove off. So I guess they could defend that one using some clever, like, argument about, like, oh, maybe he had a problem, even though he definitely didn't.
No.
And then the Tsunoda one, I think any other car, yeah, unless it was Perez or Lawson, and it would have absolutely been a penalty.
I mean, it was so stupid, wasn't it? Of course, for those of you that don't know, Tsunoda basically comes out the first three corners, heads down that little straight before the Raffles Boulevard, and Max is just on the racing line, and he doesn't move out of the way at all, does he? He sits there, no. You can see the light, the rear light flashing because he's saving battery, and Tsunoda's just got nowhere to go. But of course, you know, with it being a street circuit, you know, the track evolution is absolutely mad. So obviously we're trying to see cars improve right towards the end of the session. And Lance Stroll, massive crash, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, huge. And he just, I don't know what it is with Stroll. I think he's just so nonchalant about everything these days. That, like, in his, if you ever watch, like, the pre-weekend interviews, Stroll just comes across like he's a tourist. And he's like, yeah, yeah, I love Singapore. And that's all he ever says and stuff.
To be fair, he basically is at this point.
Yeah.
I wouldn't exactly call him an F1 driver.
Well, he qualified last in Monza, didn't he? And then he was trying to avoid qualifying last again in Singapore. And, yeah, didn't achieve it and threw himself into the barrier at the final corner. Really, really big crash. Like, the front of that car, the left-hand side was just absolutely ruined. Bit of oversteer, overcorrected, and flung himself into a tech pro. If that wasn't tech pro, he would have been in hospital still, probably, I think. So, yeah, good work for the barriers, but Stroll ruined his own chances of getting through to Q2, and also ruined Oscar Piastri's chances, because the track evolution left him 17th, and he was behind Stroll when he crashed. So, no more improvement after that, and that left Piastri and Stroll out of the session, along with two Alfa Romeos, who bought a big upgrade, which is funny, and Logan Sargeant. So, once again, out in Q1.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you ever saw as well after the incident, but someone had posted on X. Are we calling it X or are we calling it Twitter still? Let us know down in the comments below. but he'd actually pushed the concrete blocks behind the tech probe back by half a metre. And they weigh like 3 tonnes or something ridiculous.
Yeah, it must be about 160, 170
mile an hour. Well, yeah, probably a bit less than that, I would imagine, through there. But of course, the thing is, you got no runoff. Yeah. Of course, it was the way he dropped it off the end of the curb, wasn't it? You watch the bottom of the rear of the car, sorry, just squat. And of course, at that point, he's going to rotate around one way or the other. And of course, he was just, you know, he corrected it that way. So of course, you got nowhere to slow down as such. But yeah, an absolutely mad shunt for Stroll. And like you said, of course, screwed over Oscar Piastri, didn't it, at the end of the session. And I think, Oscar Piastri's going to be one of the unluckiest drivers this year. But of course, he's also quite rare in the fact that he doesn't moan about it either. He just gets on with it.
Yeah.
It's one of the things I love about Oscar. Like, he's genuinely becoming one of my favourites.
He's very, very down to earth, isn't he? So
you just get the sense that he's a bit like a new Kimi in many ways. If he just wants to get the job done. I liked him through obviously his F2 campaign as well and things like that. But I think, you know, he's really, really, you know, I've said this before on the show, haven't I? I think I like him more than Lando.
I mean, I can see why, for sure, yeah.
Richard, sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Been a while since that one. yeah, he's very, very down to earth. Like, after he got taken out in Monza by one of the supposed best drivers on the grid, he was just like, you know what? You have to take the good with the bad, and just got on with it. And it was like, he's been very unlucky on two occasions to miss out on a podium as well, hasn't he?
Yes. So,
yeah.
He just seems to be getting the job done and not rocking the boat down at McLaren, I think. Which, you know, as we spoke about earlier on this week, you know, with Lando Norris potentially off to Red Bull, you know, might still be a bit young, but certainly could do a good job in kind of building that McLaren team up in the future. But that's a topic for another day. Moving on, though, into Q2. Red Bull are still looking awful, aren't they, Jamie?
Yeah, and they were the ones to be on the cusp of getting through to Q3. Final runs, and Perez, I think, was down in 13th, and then managed to spin himself out in the first sector. So, yeah, had no chance of improving at that point, so Perez was definitely gone. And then Verstappen was not improving that much in
the
first sector.
Well, he bottled the first sector, didn't he? Sector.
Yeah, he made a mistake at turn three, didn't he? He lost about 2 or 3 tenths. Eventually did improve just into the top 10, And I think you had Gasly, both AlphaTauris, still coming to try and improve and get into Q3. Gasly couldn't do it by a couple of hundredths. And then Tsunoda got told to not improve, I think. I don't know if that's true.
Well, he never set a lap in Q2.
Yeah,
he
didn't.
Because AlphaTauri didn't want to knock Red Bull out.
And then Liam Lawson comes along, doesn't care about the team. Maybe they didn't tell him to slow down because they didn't expect him to go faster. And yeah, he just comes along and knocks out Max Verstappen in his third ever race. So I love Liam Lawson. He's probably one of my favourites on the grid already. Yeah, I think he's great and he's absolutely smashing it so far. So that left Verstappen down in P11 and out.
It was glorious.
In Q2.
So
I think
glorious.
Everyone becomes a Liam Lawson fan at that point.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, Liam Lawson. What a baller. We love Liam Lawson here. This might now be, for the next week or so, the Liam Lawson hype chat. But it did also mean, of course, Lawson getting that car into Q3 now means every single car this season has made it into Q3, which is a pretty good little stat for you. Of course, De Vries and Daniel Ricciardo hadn't got that car through. But, you know, Lawson, he's really, because he's never raced at Singapore before, he's making a name for himself, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I struggle to, like, I struggle to see how they put him back into reserve role, to be honest. I don't know what they're going to do, but surely he has to carry on driving. Like, whether they tell Ricciardo to do one, or, like, they maybe make Tsunoda a reserve driver like they did with Albon for a year. I just think Liam Lawson has to be in one of those seats next year.
I mean, if you were AlphaTauri right now, and Ricciardo says he's back for Qatar, what are you doing?
It's so hard, isn't it? Because you kind of want to give him a bit more of a chance, because Ricciardo wasn't doing that badly.
But he wasn't doing what Lawson's doing.
No. I think I would just go Lawson and Ricciardo to the end of the season.
What, and kind of let them...
And have it like a shootout.
Would you be promising you your seat for next year, though?
I think
is
I probably
what
would.
Be doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then whichever wins out of Ricciardo and Lawson gets the second seat.
I guess you let Yuki race at Japan next weekend, yeah. Get his own race out of the way, and then just say, well, kick around here till the end of the year, and we'll bring you back in for next season.
Because I think they've probably accepted they're going to finish 10th. Although, if they're not that far off Haas and AlphaTauri, are they?
They could. I reckon they still have got a chance against those two before the end. I don't think that AlphaTauri is that bad still. But yeah, like we said, you know, glorious scenes. Max Verstappen down in P11. And he was mad with that, wasn't he? He was not happy about that. Which goes to show, you know, when people moan about Lewis Hamilton crying, Verstappen is 10 times worse. It's just true. Like, unless he's winning, he's not happy. Which, you know, you can go, oh, well, that's just racing driver mentality. No, he's just, you know, he do be like that. But it did mean, though, as we got into Q3, Jamie, the hype was real, didn't it? Ferrari looked on the pace. Mercedes looked near enough on the pace. Norris looked on the pace. You know, could Haas bring a surprise both cars into Q3?
I don't know. I think they were surprised that they even got to Q3, both.
Gunther Steiner certainly was.
Yeah, they really didn't expect it at all. But yeah, it was a really, really exciting Q3, just because obviously you didn't know who was going to get pole. You thought, I guess Sainz was the favourite because he'd been setting the pace all throughout, but there's so many drivers could have pulled something out and got pole position.
Yeah, and you think any other season by the last couple of races it'd be Charles Leclerc that would just get that lap in right at the end, wouldn't you? But you know, it was a brilliant end to qualifying, but it was of course Carlos Sainz that took pole position there. Sainz followed home by George Russell and Charles Leclerc there. And around Singapore, I know obviously it's a new track and everything, which has made it a lot higher speed, but less than a tenth covering the three of them at the end was mega.
Yeah. Yeah, and the fact over such a long lap, you've got two cars, three drivers separated by less than a tenth of a second. Crazy, crazy stuff. And I think Russell and Leclerc was like a couple of thousandths, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah, 2,000ths, I believe. Or 8,000ths.
Yeah. Insane. And then Norris doing a great job up in P4 for McLaren. Hamilton losing his ability in late in his career down in P5.
Well, I think he just set the car far more up for the race, hadn't he?
Potentially, but then he still barely beat Russell in the race. So...
Well, hang on a minute. We'll talk about that in a moment.
And then Magnussen just popping up in P6 like he does every now and then.
And this of course comes a couple of weeks after Jamie tried to bash us all in for the fact that Hulkenberg's been doing so much better in quality this year.
Well,
Magnussen thought not having that.
Well done. It's 11-4.
He's still out qualified. That's not quite Haas's best qualifying result of the year, but you know, we'll talk about where they finished in a minute.
Chill out. Alonso, Aston Martin had done. I can't believe they were getting podiums earlier in the season. I mean, they actually got a podium 2 races ago, didn't they?
Exactly.
In Zandvoort. But yeah, it's such an inconsistent car, it feels like. Especially when the second driver's Lance Stroll. And yeah, Ocon, P8, just solidly there like he always is, unfortunately. And Hulkenberg and Lawson rounding out the top 10. Lawson was disappointed with his Q3 effort, but you know what?
He
knocked out Verstappen. So.
Exactly. Liam Lawson, our new Kiwi goat. but that obviously brings us then into Sunday's race. And the hype and anticipation was real. We were all there. It was time for a Red Bull's downfall. And they tried to be a bit cheeky, hadn't they? Because everyone was on the medium tyres except for both their cars and Valtteri Bottas for some reason.
Yeah. And it was a little bit strange because Singapore is notorious for a safety car. And any safety car after about 10 laps, between lap 10 and lap 40, then every medium runner is going to pit and get a free pit stop. And that's the risk you run when you try and go alternate. You see it in F2 quite a lot with that kind of thing as well. So it was a little bit, I guess they had nothing to lose really starting from so far down, but it was a little bit risky to go for the hard tyres, I thought. But yeah, they kind of had to try something different, so far down. And Bottas, I don't know what he was doing.
Well, I guess for Red Bull, though, the only question I had is why didn't they split the strategy?
Yeah, I guess. But they probably didn't want to accidentally have Perez beat Max.
That genuinely probably is it, to be honest. I would have been there for. But yeah, Carlos Sainz, though, gets away cleanly from the, obviously, pole position, obviously starting on the clean side of the track. Charles Leclerc, sorry, P3, he was actually on a set of softs, wasn't he? One of the only cars on a set of soft compound tyres. So he got George Russell before they even got to turn one. And Lewis Hamilton, actually a very good late-breaking manoeuvre.
Really?
Completely cleared Lando Norris. But George Russell then did shoulder him out through the first couple of turns, didn't he? So Hamilton had to go to the escape road.
My take on it was Lewis didn't bother with turn one. And just
no, he'd had that thing slowed down. You watch the replays. That car was slowed down.
He was unfortunate to give it back to Norris. I think it was absolutely
fair. I get that he should have given it back to Lando. However, sorry, back to George even. However, may I remind you of the last Russian Grand Prix in 2021?
What, when everyone just drove off?
No. Fernando Alonso drove off, claimed 4 places, and was allowed to keep them because he's a wily old fox. Lewis does exactly the same thing here and everyone slaughters him for it.
Absolute tears from Matt 212.
It was ridiculous. I get that Hamilton should have had to give the place back to George Russell, but how people can go, oh, well, Fernando's so intelligent, he did this, and then people go, oh, well, Lewis is just such a cheat. Like, it's insane.
Was there a bollard to go around in Singapore?
Yes. It was exactly the same as Russia.
Well, I guess Alonso was doing it more sneakily because he wasn't in third place, which probably helps, but yeah.
He basically was by the time he got back on the track right there. I think there were some people saying, well, Hamilton never got the car slowed down. He absolutely had. He was matching George Russell.
I think he went into that corner not intending to do it.
No, he definitely had. It was the Russell slammed him out. They were exactly the same speed. And, you know, I completely had to give the place back to George, but he was ahead of Lando Norris. I don't quite get how Lando managed to get away with that, having to give the place back up. But that is a conversation. You watch that replay back, Jamie. Hamilton's
I have seen it. I have seen
slowed
it.
Down.
Like, he's unlucky that he has to give it back to Norris, but you can't completely move off the track, so...
He'd already completed the move.
But you're not even
clear
through
ahead.
The second quarter yet.
He was clear ahead of Lando by the time they got round turn one. But that was followed up then, wasn't it, by Sergio Perez deciding, you know, maybe Rebel had told him it's your time now. Lawson put us out of Q2, therefore you're going to take him out. And Perez got the wrong AlphaTauri.
Yeah.
Because he sent Yuki Tsunoda to the Shadow Realm on lap one, which wouldn't be the only Shadow Realming Perez would do this weekend.
No, he kind of had a list of like potential threats to his seat and was like ticking them off one by one.
Pretty much, it was
so
stupid.
Tsunoda had a lot of pace up until Q2, and was unfortunate to not be able to show any of it. So not the best work from Perez, but he somehow didn't get any penalties all weekend, and I don't know what.
How on earth either of those cars got away?
Maybe
with
the FIA are just scared of. I mean, they're going to Mexico in about a month, aren't they? So, yeah.
Not as scared as Helmut Marko should be about going to Mexico in a month or so. You know, as we spoke about last week. But to be honest, after that on lap one, race got quite boring for a while, didn't it, Jamie?
You know what? I had to watch the race late because I was at work, and somebody had said to me, like, the race is a banger. And I at that point, I walked away from him because I didn't want to get any spoilers. And when I was watching the highlights on Channel 4 and it was like, it basically hard cut from lap 3 to lap 20, I was like, what the heck? Is he having me on? But yeah, not the best. But one thing you can always trust to liven up a race is that Logan Sargeant will crash at some point.
He doesn't crash that often.
It feels like he does all the time now.
He's just had a couple of big ones recently.
Yeah, not the best time of the season to be making mistakes when you haven't got a contract yet. But it was a shame for him. But they were so slow on the safety car. I think immediately, when there's loads of front wing debris at the exit of turn seven, immediately they knew they're going to have to put a safety car out. And I think what they were doing is basically letting everyone go past the pit lane,
yep,
so that people couldn't cry that they got a free pit stop and some didn't.
Yep. And I think it's getting insane, isn't it, at the moment? You know, we spoke about this before, haven't we, countless times. But the fact that safety car was only called out when he made it to the pit lane. And yeah, we had another one later on in the day. We've spoke about this before, but it does feel more and more often now that the FIA bring out safety cars, bring out virtual safety cars, bring out red flags at moments to make things controversial.
Well, they were trying to avoid controversy, I think, because had they, for instance, like, put the safety car out when, I don't know, the top five are past the pit lane, but everyone else can then pit, that would have been quite unfair on the top five, and people would have been annoyed. So actually, this time around, they were like... They waited for everyone to be at the same stage of everyone past the pit lane, and at that point, they called a safety car out, so no one can complain about it being unfair. But that's just ridiculous. That's not the point of the safety car. The safety car comes when there's a need for the safety car. And they waited a minute and a half, basically.
Well, it does make you wonder, like, whether they shouldn't be allowed a track map in there. They're allowed a track map, but they don't know where anyone is.
Yeah. Or the person calling the safety car out does not care where the other cars are.
Yeah. Because
I guess that defeats the point a bit, because sometimes if there's a big gap, you just call it virtual. But
we've said this before, haven't we? But it seems like Formula One is still treading that fine line between, you
sport
know,
and entertainment,
an integrity sport, and well, it's never really had that much integrity, has it? As we've delved into the iceberg so many times, but you know, the entertainment part. But obviously, yeah, we did get a full safety car, and that meant, of course, you know, the Ferrari that still had a 1-2 at the front of the field after Charles Leclerc been trying to build up a gap. He obviously had to be quite cheeky, didn't he, in trying to slow everyone else down behind him, and it didn't really work.
Yeah, well, he got the gap, so he didn't have to double stack, but he was done in a little bit because Hamilton was coming in slowly too to avoid stacking behind Russell in the pit lane.
And, of course, was parked in the box
right in front of Ferrari, waiting for Russell to get out of the way so he could pull in. So Leclerc did end up losing the place to Russell and Norris and was down to P4, effectively P4, because Verstappen and Perez did gain a lot, but were still... hadn't pitted, so they obviously would have had to later. And if Verstappen had led, on the commentary I was listening to, they were like, oh, if Verstappen had got the lead, he might have just driven off. But I don't think that ever would have happened on the 21 lap old hards compared to fresh.
Well, how quickly he went backwards anyway.
Out of the
safety car. You know, we've got to give a second shout out to Mr. Wily Old Fox, haven't we? As well. Misses the pit lane entry and gets a penalty.
Well, it didn't make a difference in the end, did it? Because Aston Martin are useless.
They threw it away anyway. But, yeah, absolutely bizarre there, you know, Fernando Alonso. Jamie, obviously, we've had some of you commenting on the earliest of all the podcasts that have been going live over on our podcast, No Wheel Channel. And, of course, Jamie, actually, in one of the very first episodes, called Fernando Alonso an old fraud.
Did I? Words for words, yeah?
Not quite word for word, but it was along those lines.
Well,
but you said he was too old to return.
I apologise for Fernando Alonso, and I say sorry for any offence I caused.
And this weekend...
You're a good driver.
He was right. Obviously, safety car gets called back in, though. And again, you know, the race wasn't too dramatic for the next few laps. But you've got to admit, it was glorious watching those Red Bulls go backwards every single lap. It was beautiful.
It was almost every corner on the first few laps, wasn't it? Oh, especially Perez.
Formula One's back. I'm here for it. I love it again. You know, this is what the sport's all about.
You're such a beta. But, no, it was... yeah, it was... Red Bull just didn't have the pace at all. And obviously, on old hards versus a load of faster cars with fresher tyres, they were always going to get eaten up. So that's exactly what happened. I think Perez dropped to about 7th and Max dropped to like 5th or 6th. And that was kind of it. What they were just trying to
defend. This does still mean, doesn't it, that Antonio Giovinazzi has led more laps at Singapore than Max Verstappen has?
Yeah, Verstappen's led 2 laps.
3, I think, yeah. To Giovinazzi's 4.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's one of his bogey tracks. He's never won there.
And it is one of his... So I think it's... He's obviously scored a podium there. But I believe the only other track that he's had this bad average in terms of not getting a win or decent podiums is Mugello. Which, of course, we only went to once he got crashed out.
And I guess... Oh, no, Imola. He did go back to...
Imola is one.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. And I guess Turkey...
Well, he got a podium there, didn't he?
He got a second place. And
yeah, but he's only ever been there once. Singapore,
twice.
He's been to...
Twice he went to Turkey.
Twice, sorry, yeah. He got 2 podiums, didn't he?
Yeah.
Who won in 2020? Did he get a podium?
Hamilton
won,
because
obviously he won the title.
I don't think he did. It was Hamilton.
No, because it was Seb, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Turkey, Mugello, and... What we're basically saying, then, is Singapore's not going to be on the calendar much longer.
And Malaysia. He never won there.
No, but he did come P2, didn't he?
Yeah.
Did he? No, did he win it in 2017?
Oh, yeah, he did. Yeah. His second ever win.
Yeah, see, we've gone down a rabbit hole very temporarily.
Yeah.
You know, Jamie trying to distract me from the Red Bull downfall, which was fantastic. And for those of you that are claiming that this is an unbiased Formula One show, we've never once claimed that in our lives. So
it's true. Especially you. You just hate Max Verstappen.
Hang on a minute. Hates, we hates both dislike the French.
I mean, yeah, but that's not a hatred. That's just a casual dislike.
A casual dislike for the French. Fair enough. Fair enough. I mean, yeah, we kind of the only problem though with the Red Bull downfall was it did kind of fan out the front runners, didn't it, a bit?
Yeah, completely. Yeah, and I guess you had no. I've always said this: when a safety car comes out at a pit window, it just kind of takes away.
It neutralizes.
Yeah, because everyone's on the same age tires, and there's no differentiation between strategy or age of tires, length of stints, all that kind of thing. So you had the Red Bulls just falling backwards, costing everyone a bit of time. And then, yeah, it kind of had it settled back into a rhythm at the front with Sainz just leading from, who was it, Russell at that point or Norris?
It was Sainz.
No, but who was second?
Oh, Russell. Sorry, no, Lando.
Yeah, it was Norris and Russell, Leclerc, Hamilton, wasn't it?
Yes. Leclerc lost to Hamilton straight off the restart, didn't he?
Leclerc bottled it on the restart, didn't he? Fraud.
Which was incredible. Because when the safety car came out, it's going to be a little bit of a story time for you, Jamie. When the safety car came out, I turned to my girlfriend, because she's a big Ferrari fan, and I went, this is where Ferrari mess it up. I'm warning you now before it happens. And now she's a big Leclerc fan. She doesn't mind Sainz, but is not big on him. And of course, I said, you know, this is where Ferrari messed it up, and it will be messed up for Charles Leclerc. And of course, you know, she was a bit upset, but she said to me, obviously, as they were behind the safety car, she went, well, at least he's still ahead of Lewis. I went, yeah, but it won't be for long because Lewis is the GOAT. And literally 2 corners later, Lewis got past him. And I couldn't help but have a good chuckle.
Wasn't the best from Leclerc this weekend. But, yeah, kind of settled down again. And then, yeah, eventually Perez was kind of holding everyone up. But the pace differentiation wasn't that much between him and the cars behind him. So you had Alonso trying to get past Perez while you had Ocon and I think Lawson... and Gasly, and maybe some other cars in there as well. All behind Sergio Perez. And you had Alonso go for a move, and then Ocon, Alonso, Perez battle was insane. I don't know how there wasn't contact, to be honest.
Because there's beef between Alonso and Ocon.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess there's beef between Ocon and Perez as well.
Like anyone else, I don't know what it is, but Fernando Alonso just cannot ever seem to get the better of Esteban Ocon.
Well, he
He's in a better car. Yeah, like, I'll give you
and
that.
Like last season, he was absolutely the better driver, but just got unlucky.
Oh yeah, but Ocon beat him on points, didn't he? Which is what I mean. You know, Alonso is the better driver, but for some reason, it's always Ocon when they're together that somehow shithouses it.
Yeah, but got his comeuppance and Alpine struck again a couple laps later, and Ocon's P6, and actually quite a good drive to be fair to him, went unrewarded, which brought me a bit of satisfaction.
It brought everyone a bit of satisfaction, unless you're French.
Yeah. And even if you are French, you might be a Gasly fan, in which case, great. Ocon out the race, lap 43. Bought out.
Just after the Red Bull pit.
Yeah, which was funny for anyone not
literally a lap later.
Because if a safety car was there, Verstappen would have been in the pound seats, probably for a podium at least. And then, safety car comes out with, 20-ish? Maybe, 20 laps to go. And although it comes out again way too late. Because it came out about a minute after Ocon broke down. DNF.
And after the top five had gone past the pit lane entry.
Again, because they don't want to screw people over, basically.
But they could have called out miles beforehand.
Yeah. Both Mercedes actually took the opportunity to pit, which is very aggressive. And Mercedes are usually not that aggressive on strategy. They went for it. Both cars pit. Ferrari missed the beat. Because Leclerc had nothing to lose by pitting and chose not to. So was up to third because the Mercedes obviously did. And a few more cars down the field pitted, but the big story was Mercedes double stack with Russell and Hamilton now on fresh mediums going to the end of the race at about 15 seconds behind the race lead.
And Alonso.
And Aston Martin, just what on earth was that?
Well, despite the fact they had 5 seconds to line everything up on that car because he was serving the penalty, still managed to drop it off the rear jack.
And the front jack, I think, too early too. Like, they couldn't get the front or rear right off. So it was a bit of a shambles. And then they actually waited so long to service the car that the VSC was over by the time that, that Alonso was out of the pit lane. So he lost out massively, returned last place pretty much, and never had the pace to recover all the lost time. So not the best weekend for Aston Martin, really.
But clearly, though, the talking point was going to be the fight towards the front, wasn't it? Because Mercedes were going at 1.3 seconds a lap faster than the cars in front of them, weren't they? But more interestingly than that was Hamilton had taken, I think it was something ridiculous, like 5 seconds out of George over the space of 8 laps. So, you were talking about how he'd lost all his skill in qualifying. Quite clearly, over race trim, Hamilton was the faster car.
And he has been all season, really, than Russell.
Yeah. George can do it over one lap, but Lewis is absolutely the better race driver at the moment again. Which really goes against the George Russell plan, doesn't it? It does,
and even more so later on. Sorry, a bit tired this morning.
Getting a bit tired, Jamie, are we?
Yeah, you're boring me.
Formula One, sorry.
It was actually a good race as well.
It was a fantastic race.
Yeah. So I get why Mercedes didn't give them any team orders, but I feel like if they had, then maybe the outcome would have been a bit different.
I think the outcome most probably would have been different.
Potentially. But eventually, the Mercs did catch up to the back of Sainz and Lando for P1 and P2. And then Sainz did an absolute mega brain, to be fair to him. And it's a strategy that we see a lot on, like, the F1 game in league racing. But I don't think we've seen it executed properly yet in real life. We've seen it
a couple of
times,
I would have thought. But probably not for the win.
Yeah, definitely not for the win. I remember the team, it was 2019, with Norris's team radio, where it was like, hold Gasly in DRS. And he's like, do you mean like forever?
Yes, that was Austria, wasn't it?
That was Austria, yeah. I was there that day. And I don't think we've ever seen it for a win. We've certainly never seen it where a driver thinks of it himself. Because Sainz knew that Norris was not the threat. And having Norris 0.8 behind him versus 1.1 behind him makes no difference to Sainz's race. But having Norris 0.8 behind him gives Norris more ability to defend from the way faster Mercedes behind. So it's very, very clever from Carlos Sainz. And he had to soak up so much pressure in these last few laps.
Yeah, and it did kind of feel a little bit like redemption, didn't it, for Carlos Sainz, obviously, after last weekend. But the fact that Ferrari hadn't even said that to him, he just decided it on himself to just keep Lando within the range meant that, George Russell only really got one opportunity, wasn't it? And that was on lap 59. And then the McLarenite dragged him anyway.
Yeah, yeah. It was quality defending from Norris. Like, Russell was down the inside. Norris had the outside line, I think. Was that the case?
Switchback, yeah.
Yeah, and just out-dragged him, and then the straight line speed of that McLaren really helped him out. Because if Russell's through there, Russell wins the race. There's no question about it at all in my mind.
You're right.
But
you're right.
Norris just was able to stay ahead, and the important thing was switching back to the inside for the next quarter. Make sure not Russell couldn't send it, because if Russell gets the inside, it's done. But Norris, fair play to him. And the cleverest thing I think that Sainz did, because all this battling gave Sainz like a 1.8 second lead or something.
It did a 1 point, yeah.
But through sector one, Sainz basically just coasted to make sure Norris was back in DRS down to turn five. It was so smart. Like, Sainz, yeah, fair play to him, was playing it like a fiddle. And
he, yeah, eventually, you know, obviously got the rewards. Those two have got a bit of history as well, haven't they? You know, they were good teammates back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, you know, and you know, obviously Fernando as well, you know, I think it's sensibly he knew, unless Sainz made a mistake, he wasn't winning that anyway. So of course, I wonder if, you know, say if Sainz had messed it up just a little bit too much at one point, where like Lando would have even gone for a move.
Mm.
Just because he probably knew sensibly it wasn't his race to
I
have.
I think he would have done.
He
still.
Might have done, but I don't think he would have gone for a risky move.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah,
you know, if Sainz had absolutely messed up, say, the run out onto the back straight and Lando could have just gone past him, he would have. I mean, you know, if there would have been like a 50-50 one, I don't
think
Lando
like
would have taken
it. Anyway.
It.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously that obviously meant though that if you know, the last five laps we have four cars covered by less than like a second and a half, wasn't it? It was insane. And it goes to show how many times this season we could have had these kind of finishes for the win had Red Bull not been there with an illegal car.
You're such a cry. What is this?
But then on the final lap, as they head down into what is the former Singapore sling, Lando Norris trying to push the limits, nudges the wall with his rear right, and George Russell behind him goes, anything you can do, I can do better. Shears the rear right off and goes straight into the wall on the final lap of the most difficult race of the year. And Lewis Hamilton, who, you know, as we both said there, possibly, you know, should Mercedes have let him by, could he have won that race, claims the podium anyway.
Yeah, really poor mistake from Russell. I do not care that it was really high pressure and he's just given everything and not come up. He should not be crashing like that.
He shouldn't be, no. I guess, obviously, you know, on the contrary to that, highly unlikely that's going to make a difference come the end of the season. You know, I don't think, you know, Mercedes are going to worry about those 12 points to Ferrari. You know, I think they're comfortably far enough ahead still. But for George Russell's psychology, that must be good.
Especially
I'm sure
when he's
that kept
him
up
once
at night.
This season on his own.
Yes, yeah. You know, he's starting to turn into a little bit of a Charles Leclerc.
A little bit. And also, Mercedes are only 24 points ahead of Ferrari.
Is the gap only 24? I thought it was closer to 40-odd still.
No, 289 to 265.
Fair. Actually, yeah, Ferrari have done well, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. Obviously a 1-4 this race versus just a P3 for Mercedes.
And
so,
obviously a 3-4 last weekend.
Yeah, yeah, Fred Vasseur masterclass.
Exactly, exactly. We got to see Fred Vasseur on the podium as well.
Oh, I loved it.
Beautiful, wasn't it?
You know? Yeah, Schumacher.
Yeah, Schumacher. Schumacher. We love Fred Vasseur here. We were having him on the show. It's a shame he's at Ferrari now, so he never would. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But again, of course, whilst all this was going on, live TV didn't really pick it up. But Sergio Perez completely screwed Alex Albon. Of course, we mentioned at the start how Perez basically had a list of people that might take his seat. Albon just got sent to the shadow realm in the last couple of laps, and how this wasn't a penalty, I will never know.
I have no idea how it wasn't a penalty. Because Albon was P8, wasn't he? Or I guess it would have been P8 once Russell crashed.
I think he might have been slightly lower than that.
Well, Perez finished 8th, and this was his last move, wasn't it? So, yeah, Perez just down the inside of the over the bridge into the second DRS straight, just completely punted him into the wall, and got away with it. And I have no idea how. I think Perez, the FIA is scared of him. A shame for Albon because he was probably going to get points on a nice strategy pitting under the VSC.
Well, and that is, of course, as well as the fact that Williams should not have scored points this weekend. You know, it would have been a bit like Zandvoort again, wouldn't it? Where they kind of pick up a couple of points through good strategy rather than actual raw car pace.
Until Sergio Perez had other ideas. For me, Max Verstappen actually did quite well in the last stint, to be fair to him. He's an all right driver, apparently. yeah, because he came out the pits in P15, ended up through a few overtakes and a few crashes, obviously, and a few people pitting under the SC. Ended up half
and a car that's won
P4.
Every other race this year.
Yeah, that helped. But his teammate didn't do that well, did he? So, yeah, very strong recovery in the last stint from Verstappen. Ended up P5 and caught up about 20 seconds on Leclerc in about six laps at the end.
I think Leclerc had all but given up, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah. And if Verstappen had been in fourth, that would have been insane recovery. But
it would have been a decent recovery drive, to be fair. But it did mean, Jamie, Red Bull are not going to get an undefeated Formula One season. And just like the last time a team looks to be going almost undefeated, 1988, it is a Ferrari that ends the run. Carlos Indeed. Sainz, second ever Formula One victory. He was back on top. And I tell you what, this weekend, you know, Silverstone last year, Charles Leclerc probably should have won that race had Ferrari not screwed him. Sainz probably should have won Monza last weekend had that Red Bull not been there. He, I will say, deserved this one.
Absolutely. And he was on it all weekend. He's been quality in Singapore.
I do wonder whether Ferrari are going to have issues between now and the end of the year with Sainz being better than Leclerc again. Because it very much looks like we're going to have two seasons of the three they've been together where Sainz outscores Charles.
Yeah, though 21 had a lot of circumstances.
Well, so is 23, you could argue, but there's only so many times you can blame circumstance.
Yeah, true. And Sainz certainly was the faster driver this weekend. He was last week in Monza and he was in Zandvoort. So, you know, if this carries on, then what do they do?
Very, very interesting, isn't it? Down at Ferrari. Lando Norris, though, picks up another podium for McLaren. You know, very good job by them with their stealth livery. And Lewis Hamilton, you know, back on the podium once more in Singapore. Beats out Charles Leclerc, Max Verstappen, Pierre Gasly, Oscar Piastri, you know, brilliant recovery by him. And again, you know, just quietly gets the job done.
Mm.
Love Oscar Piastri. Perez, Lawson, AlphaTauri's best result of the year, if I'm not mistaken. With
equal
P9.
Best, I think, yeah.
Oh, no, did they get a P? I thought they. No, I thought you had three best. P10s. Yeah, Lawson with a P9 there. That is Daniel Ricciardo's F1 career done. and Magnussen proving once again that he can outrace Nico Hülkenberg.
What, is that why he's behind in the championship, yeah?
Not by the end of the year. Calling it now.
Absolutely not. Hulk is
That's
definitely beating Magnussen.
One.
Clip that. Hulk, if Hulk doesn't beat Magnussen, I will stop that sentence there.
No, come on. You gotta give us something for that. For the clips.
I'll get a Kevin Magnussen hat.
Okay. Interesting. Who was your driver of the day, Jamie 183?
I think it's easy to give it to Sainz. So yeah, I'll give it to Sainz.
Fair enough.
There's a few other drivers. Obviously, Piastri did well. Lawson, I think Verstappen did do quite well to get back to P5. But I think I'll give it to Carlos Sainz.
I'm going to say Oscar Piastri then, just for being a bit different.
Yeah.
Piastri or Lawson, I think, for me. Predictions recap?
Have you checked what you said?
I can't remember what I said off the top of my head.
I've gone to go find it. You said, and you're going to love this.
I said Leclerc pole, didn't
Leclerc
I? Which almost looked right.
You said
I got the right car, but just not the right driver.
Verstappen to win the race.
Yep.
You said
which I
Leclerc,
knew I got wrong.
Leclerc to finish second, and Fernando Alonso to finish third.
So I got nothing.
You got zero points.
But you're sounding very confident. I'm not convinced you did much better.
I said Max Verstappen pole, obviously not.
Nothing.
Max Verstappen win.
Nothing.
No. Alonso P2. So
nothing.
Lewis Hamilton P3. We There we go. We take 2 points.
Jamie's going back to 2022 strats and just shithousing points. Oh, what does that mean for the scores on the doors?
I'm ahead of you by 2 because George Russell's a fraud.
Okay. That's annoying, I won't lie. Is it by 2, is it? What are the scores?
48 to 46.
Oh, you've just edited them.
I have.
Okay.
We will go on to the quiz real quick, and you're gonna love the theme.
No.
I think you're gonna love this all in, to be honest.
Oh no!
So, Red Bull Racing Formula One team had their first first race that neither car got to Q3 on pure pace alone since the 2008 Brazilian Grand Prix.
Really?
Yeah, genuinely, on pure pace. That's
mad. Yeah, I know, obviously they've had a few because of penalties and stuff, isn't it? Because Bottas's Q3 streak lasted longer than Red Bull's.
Yeah, it did. But the... So your challenge, obviously, that qualifying session was the last time neither Red Bull was in the top 10. But who was in the top 10?
Well, the 2008 Brazilian Grand Prix.
Yes, you've got a minute starting now.
Felipe Massa.
Yeah.
Kimi Raikkonen. Sebastian Vettel. Lewis Hamilton. Heikki Kovalainen. Nick Heidfeld. Robert Kubica. Timo Glock. Jarno Trulli. Adrian Sutil.
You're doing well.
Kazuki Nakajima, Nico Rosberg.
No, you got two left.
Is Rosberg one?
No.
I'm trying to think who else was decent back then. Trying to work out who was where. I'm trying to remember.
Oh. It'd be funny if you don't get one of these.
Jenson Button.
No, you got Rubens Barrichello. Seconds. Nope.
If I don't get one of these. Fernando Alonso.
Yeah.
Yeah.
9 seconds.
Nelson Piquet?
No.
Junior?
Five.
Can you? I know I won't get the point. Can you tell me which team it was for?
Well, that'll give it away.
Yeah, I know it will. I'm just trying to test my memory. Was it Bourdais?
It was Sebastian.
Oh, Bourdais. I should have said it was Seb.
Yeah. Because Seb was apparently the GOAT in the Toro Rosso, when the Toro Rosso was actually just really good.
Well, I watched a brilliant video from Peter Brook a couple of days ago. I don't know if you've seen this. Fantastic F1 content creator. He basically did what happens if the F1 2008 season was ran in reverse.
Oh, that would be quality.
So up until Monza, I think it was Alonso Belgium was or Monza, scorer, Alonso was leading the championship.
Yeah.
He had a 13-point lead after the opening five races.
Wow.
Vettel was, I think, P3 at one point, tied with Hamilton and Massa.
Yeah.
Or, like, 1 point behind them. It was
insane. Those two, neither of them deserved the title that year. They both made so many mistakes.
Well, towards the end, but...
Like, they were just both trying to bottle it as much as they could.
It did kind of seem like a... It was almost like McLaren again were trying to not win the title. Yeah. Prove that they didn't win through cheating.
They didn't cheat in 07, even though they definitely did.
Yeah. Jamie, 183. I think what we've got to do now is the race rating, isn't it?
I think it is.
Kind of smash through everything. I'll take 9 out of 10 on the quiz, by the way.
Yeah, decent effort. Talking of 9 out of 10, that's what I'll give the race as well. I think it would have been 10, but there was actually not much jeopardy for the race win, which I always love a bit of jeopardy.
I mean, you can't argue that. Four cars covered by a second.
I guess, but there was no changes once they all got in the train.
Oh, you can't have the script every week. It's not an hour of career mode.
I suppose. But say if Lewis Hamilton did come through and win that race out of nowhere, or Norris took it, then sure, I'll give it a 10. But it wasn't like... It'll be up there for one of the best races of the decade, probably, but it won't be the best.
Best race of the season, at least?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I think it's probably... It was better than Silverstone last year, which is probably currently the best race of the decade.
Yeah, I'm trying to think whether there are any decent on-track battles between.
I guess
Lewis
does 2020 does 2020 count as a decade? Actually,
2020, yeah, definitely is part of the decade. Oh, that had a few bangers.
That did actually, because Sakhir was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, Sakhir, I probably would still argue has probably been the race of the decade.
Yeah, and Abu Dhabi 21, obviously.
No, but, worst race of the decade.
It was the best last.
Turkey, I think 2020. Turkey, one of the best races of the decade.
It was a bit slow burn, wasn't it?
No. It had carnage from the get-go.
It was just the lap times were so slow. It was like 1:56 the whole time.
Yeah, it was hilarious, though, wasn't it?
Let us know what you think, race of the decade so far, from 2020.
We'll do a top 10 countdown at some point.
We will at some point. End of the season.
End of the decade, 2030, when Jamie and I are still doing the podcast.
I really hope I'm not doing this.
With kids screaming in the background. and whatever Jamie's hiding in his basement. but yeah, I don't. Have we got anything else to add?
What's your rating? You didn't give it a rating.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was going to say 9 out of 10 as well.
Why? You're complaining at me for giving it 9. You're giving it 9 too.
Yeah, but 10 out of 10 is going to be a real worldy.
Yeah, like Canada 11 is 10 out of 10.
Exactly. Exactly. Have we got anything else to add, though, Jamie? This has been a long podcast. We haven't hit an hour podcast in a few
I don't think
weeks
it would
now.
Quite be an hour, because you were chatting about your dog for about 5 minutes before.
We were chatting about my dog for a couple of minutes beforehand. That was pre-show, though. So for those of you that don't know, my dog went to Monza last weekend because my dad wanted to show my mum the circuit and didn't realise that there was racing going on. So my dog got to watch Mahavir Raghunathan score a podium, which we absolutely love.
Yeah.
So clearly, we my do. Dog 212 is a good omen. But Jamie, have we got anything else to add?
I don't think we do. Thank you very much
Thank
for watching.
Thank you all so much for watching. If you've enjoyed, please do make sure you drop us a follow. Get yourself subscribed to the Knowing Wheel official YouTube channel. And we shall return later on this week, isn't it, Jamie? We'll have to do a Japanese Grand Prix preview. I look forward to hearing your smooth, sultry tones once again.